Welcome to the So What Are You Reading podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie.
And I'm Alicia.
And today we have got an interview for you guys.
Yes.
We are interviewing author Irina Ember. She is the author of the book Bad Agency. And if you follow us on Instagram, you'll see that she sent us her book.
Super excited.
Yes, I am so excited to talk to her. Irina is a real estate agent in the San Francisco Bay Area. So first of all, girl, shout out to you for doing that job.
Nice.
I can't even imagine selling real estate.
It sounds so hard.
Yes.
And you got to wear heels, I guess.
And you have to just be around annoying ass people.
You don't have to wear heels. That's not real. But yeah, buying a house is like really stressful, and you work with them for a very long time. It's like it's customer service on crack.
Right.
Like, no, because this is actually important.
Yeah, this is like a real
I
thing.
I can't just abandon you.
Right.
I can't just give you to somebody else.
So I'm excited to talk to her.
Yeah.
And I read a little bit of her book, and she is very descriptive, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
I like people who know how to use words in a very descriptive way. So
yeah, I'm interested to get into it. It looks like a nice, like digestible read, especially after coming off the big
Yeah, board. I'm just going to read the synopsis for her book. It says, Ruby is her own worst enemy. Showing great empathy for others, the floundering real estate agent masks lingering childhood trauma with poor decisions, inappropriate sexual encounters, and doormat-like behaviors. When she stands up for the office receptionist, she inadvertently triggers a backlash that sends her reeling. Desperate to undo the damage, Ruby struggles to understand why her choices always backfire. When her interest in a handsome neighbor is rewarded with first love, then more abuse, the anxious survivor battles her instincts to believe this is just how things are. Will Ruby finally find the happiness she deserves? With an intimate look inside the pain of complex PTSD, author Irina Ember paints a sympathetic and insightful portrait of a person unable to enforce boundaries. As the reader roots for Ruby to recognize and advocate for her own needs, they will come to a greater understanding of how the ghosts of the past are difficult to dispel. Bad Agency is a pungent book, a pungent literal novel. If you like real world characters, emotional journeys, and genuine challenge of self-healing, then you'll adore this captivating drama. So I'm excited to talk to her about this book.
I like a real good emotional journey like that. Well, I like flawed main characters, of course, but as long as it's for a purpose now.
Yeah, and I like somebody who's like really going through something and comes out on the other side of a journey.
Or don't. Like, you can stay
She's like, I like being this terrible person.
Yeah, I say regress.
Yeah.
Go back.
Right.
Do worse.
And I'm excited to just talk to an author. I love talking to authors. I love picking their brain.
Yeah. Interesting to see.
Yes.
What the inspiration is, too.
Before we get into that, we want to say thank you to everybody that we went out to the Night Circus last night.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was so much fun.
Super fun. I loved it.
Everybody was so dressed up. Costumes were elaborate.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to have lots of really pictures on our Instagram. So
yeah.
We'll
that was really that. What was the fun part for me, honestly. Just seeing
everybody's costumes and the performances were really good. Those people that danced the tango, very good. I've never seen someone dance the tango before.
Oh, like in person?
Yeah. So that was very good.
Very good.
The singers were good. Everything was good.
The singers were really good.
So that was exciting. What have you been reading? Did you finish Priory?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Finally. Oh, my God.
Oh.
I'm so slow, you guys. I'm so sorry. I don't care. That's how I do it. So, basically, I don't even know where I left off with you. So, we already know that Caliba the Witch basically founded all of this shit.
Yeah, you know? The whole thing was a lie.
Yeah, the whole Freudian, like, boy mom shit. Mm-hmm. Like the boy mom to Freudian pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. He's, like, I know his abs are on 10 from, like, just rolling. Laughing in his grave.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
The shit is crazy. So that happened. And, like, honestly, the idea in this very, you know, women-led, female-empowered, like, kind of book, you know, all of the leaders are women, all of the religious leaders, everything, like, the founding religion of pretty much everybody is based on a woman's story. Like, all of that, the idea that a boy mom would ruin that fits. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean.
No, don't do that to boy moms.
Boy moms, and I mean that, like, not like if you are the mother of a son. I mean boy moms derogatory. Almost slur-like. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that fits. I liked it. Anyway, after that, basically, she now has Ascalon, the powerful sword that can be used to kill, like, Big Boy Dragon, mm-hmm. the Nameless One, which is, like, crazy because that's kind of his name. Like,
the Nameless One?
Is his name. Mm-hmm. Anyway, whatever.
I'm not going to get into it.
That's just what they call him. So, like, okay. But in a way, you have therefore named him. You're supposed to say that or something. Yeah. I don't know. Whatever. So she's got the sword. They go back essentially empty-handed. We've also caught up with Tane, who has the other jewel. She winds up going to the West as, like, an Eastern ambassador and to basically tell Sabran, like, girl, I've got the other jewel. Like, we're going to have to fight this thing together. Cool. So they're back at the palace, everybody together, you know, that have survived this long. Mm-hmm. And so they pretty much hatch up a plan to get the East to agree to that alliance that is going to help them basically bring everybody that's not under draconic rule together mm-hmm. to fight Big Boy Dragon. So they're like, they readily accept it. You know, they understand how dire the situation is. So they're like, oh shit, I guess we're doing this. So
it's real.
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. seriously. So they go to the Empire of the 12 Lakes, where the Unceasing Emperor and the Warlord are, and that they are the ones who enacted the travel ban from the East. Mm-hmm. Nobody's allowed to come over there because of the Red Sickness, basically. So these are the guys that put that in motion. So Loth stays over there to kind of, like, feed the, you know, again, like, be nice to him, show hospitality, like, hey, we come in good faith, like, we want to meet with you guys, you know, because, you know, the Big Boy Dragon's, like, definitely coming soon, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah, sure, like, that's totally cool. They tell him a little bit about them, and then, like, you know, it actually goes, like, surprisingly well and without conflict. Cool. Meanwhile, Eden them is training. So did I tell you about how she got shot with the dart or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
So she wakes up from that. Cool. She's back in the game. They start training with their jewels and all that other stuff. Somewhat. Not, like, a whole lot, because they don't have a lot of time, but a little bit. And that's what they're doing over there. And then at the same time, Nicolas has gotten his arm cut off by the Pirate Queen.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that happened back when, like, they were trying to find the mulberry tree.
Yeah.
When it fell. You know, it was kind of that thing where he was like, well, it's not my fault, like, that it died and fell over. Like,
right.
I led you to the right place. This is where it was. Like, how was I
supposed to... Yeah, what do you want me to do about it?
Right, like, I just deciphered this on your ship. How was I supposed to know it was like this? She's, like, still mad about it, I guess, when Tane had, like, kind of ambushed them mm-hmm. with the jewel and, like, you know, gotten them out of there or whatever. And so she'd cut off his arm. And so he washes ashore. You know, he gets the nub sewed up. Mm-hmm. He's got the fever and everything. He's just going through it as usual, my boy, you know. But that, you know, that's kind of what happens when you're, like, a slimy person. Like, you right. know, you never really have peace, so to speak. Right. So that's just kind of what he's going through. Cool. He winds up with Caliba the witch. So she, like, finds him kind of, like, I don't know if he was, like, really stumbling around or if he was staying with somebody or what. But she, like, rolls up on him and is like, hey, I know you. Like, I know that you know the two girls, or I know that you know one of the girls, Tane, who's basically the descendant of Naporo, like, the first Eastern Queen. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all of first blood, meaning that they are descendants of, like, the original players in this whole mm-hmm. war. So, like Sabran, she's Caliba's descendant. Eid is descendant from Cleolin's handmaiden, Siati mm-hmm. or whatever. And then Tane is descended from, like, one of the first Eastern Queens, Naporo. So, like, everybody has their own little mm-hmm. nepo babies, whatever. Like, you know, I don't care. That's what it is. But we love them nonetheless. So, you know, it's just kind of like you all are the chosen one. Like,
okay.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Why can't it be Margaret? You know, we fucks with Margaret. Margaret's black. So, we fuck with Margaret. But nonetheless, Caliba takes Nicolas and basically shows, you know, she's a shapeshifter. So she, like, turns into his old lover, Janart, and is like, oh, like, I can train you, basically. Mm-hmm. I can teach you how to be a mage. And that is true. So, like, typically, I don't know if this is true for most of fantasy, but it's been my experience that there is always, you know, natural born magic and then taught magic. Mm-hmm. And they tend to exist in the same universes. Not all the time, but sometimes. So, like, this is one of those times where it does. So she's like, I can teach you, like, you know, I can basically build your powers, like your alchemy. I can turn into mm-hmm. magecraft, all the other stuff. Like, you just got to do what I say, which is basically she gives him this glass shard made of like starin, which is the opposite magic of what Eid is, mm-hmm. to kill her with. And is like, you know, basically go stab her. So he rolls up on their ship, because at this time, Sabran and all of the Western mm-hmm. kingdoms are riding over to the east to go and meet so that they can train together and use these dragons to fight the other ones. This dude rolls up on the ship with his little bloody stump, and he got a little glass shard in the hand, and Sabran sees him. This is the first time they've seen each other in 8 years, because remember, she's the one mm-hmm. that, like, banished him. He comes up to her, and he's, like, basically reaming her ass. Like, I can't believe you did this. Like, it was so long. How dare, like, it's not even that serious what I did. Like,
you bugging.
Like, you literally was bugging.
Right.
And she's like, but bro, you like took my deepest, darkest fear and exploited it. And he's like, okay, yeah, but damn. So she's like, and mind you, she's just letting him vent for a mm-hmm, minute. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, well, I really came to see my granddaughter. Like, he knows he's going to try to kill Eid in his mind or whatever, but he really don't feel like it. And like, that's when they tell him that Truide is dead, that she got executed, remember, by Igraine Crest before, when she had like taken over the kingdom or whatever. Mm-hmm. So she's dead. He's like, oh, my God, like, this is all my fault. Kind of is low key, because you were not there to take care of her when her granddaddy died. Piece of shit. So now she's dead. And he was really sad about that. And then he, like, gives up the shard and is like, you know what? I don't feel like doing this shit. I'm gonna be honest with you. Like, I'm just trying to not die of this amputation. And two, kind of tired of the whole, like, you know, basically cat and mouse game. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm mm-hmm. I'm constantly just like jumping from, you know, frying pan to fire, like doing everything but what I'm supposed to be doing. So like, fuck it, I'ma just go lay down. I'ma just go lay down. So he does that, and then basically they now have this glass shard of starin, which is really good for them because they later use it to kill the witch on the ship. So this is during like the end game fighting thing. Mm-hmm. Like, Caliba shows up. She was in her dragon form. She fought Tane with the jewel. Tane injures her a little bit because Tane also ate of the orange tree. So she's also got, like, mage powers now, which is, like, really fucking cool because now I want some. And so they do that. She, like, rolls up on Sabaran and is basically talking shit to her. And then Eid was able to use that same shard of glass that she literally made to kill her, to kill her ass back. Basically stabbed her. She dies on the ship. Boom, bow, got the sword, right? Then they start fighting Big Boy Dragon, the nameless one. They in mm-hmm. the sky. They all tussling and shit. People falling off they dragons and shit. They dying. They blowing up. They getting bit in half and shit.
Oh, my God.
It's really crazy. Like, it's really crazy. I don't know. It just sounds really uncomfortable and wet and cold. And, like, I wouldn't be able to see. So that's what it, yeah. So, I would have missed it. I would have fell off my dragon first on the way up. So they do manage to, like, stab him all the way to the chest with the sword. Breaks off. Tane falls into the water a little bit. She good, though. Everybody's hurt and, you know, all the other stuff. But I guess the adrenaline, you don't really feel it. So, like, actually, Eid manages to, like, finish him off. They bury him at the bottom of the sea. All the sea dragons go down there to make sure, you know what I'm saying? Make sure he's dead. And so the rest of the dragons, like Theridel and all the other big dragons, like, they kind of fly away and, like, kind of lose their power, I guess. Kind of. Like, there's a bunch of smaller dragons. But a lot of the big evil dragons died. So that was good, including the nameless one. So he's officially deceased. Boom. Cat. Dead. And then after that, everybody just kind of gets their resolution, which is really cool. Of course, word spreads that they defeated the huge dragon and that, you know, all is well and all that other stuff. And, you know, now there's a new alliance between the West and the East. Tane gets reinstated back to the Miduchi clan so she can, like, be a dragon rider again. Nicles gets invited back to his old, back to Mentendon to, like, basically live in the court of, you know, High Princess or Muner or whatever. And basically, he was able to meet up with Jannart's ex-wife, or his widow, really, because they were having an affair, for sure. And they're going to, you know, live out their days chilling. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not exiled anymore. He might be a professor at some, like, university or something like that. He's chilling with the one arm. Sabran, and, you know, she decided she was going to rule for 10 more years, and then she was going to abdicate the throne. And then after that, she wants to go and live with Eid somewhere. Eid becomes prioress, you know, because Mita Yadanya, she, like, totally got murdered by the witch. Mm-hmm. So, like, they needed a new prioress. This bitch definitely slayed our biggest threat known to man. It's going to be her. So she's going to do that for a decade and then give it up. And they're probably going to go live together, I think. And then Margaret and Sir Therian Lintley, you know, they're going to get married or whatever. And then Loth, you know, inherited his lordship and all the other stuff. So it was like a really nice, sweet ending. We definitely lost some people along the way.
Oh.
We lost a few folks.
Oh, those are the worst.
We got there, though.
Yeah.
We got there. And that's the point, you know?
Right.
RIP to the rest of y'all. Sorry.
Sorry. Sorry to this man.
Yeah. But it was really good otherwise. Wrapped up really nice. The battle scene was really good. Everything was really well articulated. Everything made sense. No plot holes.
Yeah, that's good.
No plot holes. Don't piss me off, you know?
That's good.
Yeah.
I love a good, nice wrap up.
Yeah.
That's good. It sounds like a really good book.
It was good.
Mm-hmm.
There is a prequel that's out, so I'll read that at some point. I already kind of started like the intro to it, but mm-hmm. I need a break.
Take a break. Yeah.
Take a break.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's me.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I have been reading Fairy Tale by Stephen King. I've been listening to it on Audible. So we remember last time we left off where Charlie was down. He had just gone down into the tunnel, into the other world.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so now we find out the other world's called Lilimar. And he,
Lilimar.
Yeah, he is down in there. He gets past this woman, this giant woman named Hannah, and she's like an evil bitch. And she, like, gives him a hard time. But he gets into the city. He gets Radar on the sundial, spins the sundial around, and Radar goes, every time you spin the sundial around, it takes him back a year.
Okay.
So Radar's back and is healthy. So now, on the way to the sundial, he runs into, like, this little dwarf thing that has this really, he's, like, a little evil little piece of shit. And he was, like, torturing this bug. And so Charlie made him stop, and the dwarf guy was like, why are you protecting this bug? I'm a little piece of shit, and he just fucking runs
God.
Off. And then he runs off. But of course, so Mr. Bodetich, the way Charlie gets to the sundial is because Mr. Bodetich had left signs, like markers for him to get there.
Mm.
So the little piece of shit dwarf fucks up the markers.
God.
Yeah. So now Charlie is stuck in Lilimar, down in the tunnel, in the other world.
Okay, let me just say.
I told you so.
I'm going to, one, two, I'm going to play devil's advocate. Because what are you even doing here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Now you can't leave. Now what?
Oh, it's about to get worse.
I'm kind of with the piece of shit dwarf. I'm kind of with them.
He goes down in there. He's trapped. Now, remember, they were telling him not to be in there after dark, right?
So, okay, what does after dark mean?
Like, when the sun goes down. Okay, so also down in there,
I feel like they should give me a time.
Also down in there, there are these giant monarch butterflies that fly over.
What does that mean?
And I don't know. They mean something.
Spirits?
No, they're actual giant monarch butterflies.
But, I mean, like, do they represent?
I don't know. They got to say something. They got to do something. But anyway, he gets lost. He gets all turned around, of course, because he had the little dwarf guy had messed up all the markers. So he was on, like, a tricycle thing, but he ends up having to ditch that. And so then he's on foot. Charlie is 17.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. So
he's not making the best decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
because the way I would have just like never gone into that shed. Oh my ever God. Again, I would have closed that shit right the fuck back up. I can't even imagine. Gone inside and been like, I'm going to pretend. I'm literally going to repress this so deep.
And act like I do not know that it's there.
I'm going to forget about it.
When he starts getting lost, everything starts getting all turned around. Like, the where he's supposed to go, the main building in the city, one minute it's, like, on his left side, then one minute it's on his right side. So he's, like, getting himself all turned around. Inside Lilimar is all, it's a strange place.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, the sun's about to go down. He starts running to get, he kind of gets himself oriented to where he's supposed to get back to the main road. But then he starts running towards the gate where he thinks it's going to get him out to the main road. And then, like, these, they call them the night soldiers. They start coming up out of the ground and start chasing after him.
Absolutely fucking not.
Yes. So then he's running towards the gate. He gets to the gate. The gate's opening. It's like this giant stone door, so it's opening really, really slow. And Radar's the only one that can get through, Stephanie. And Charlie gets captured.
Stephanie. You don't understand.
Yeah.
My hair would turn white
with
fear.
Oh, my God.
And I would simply cease to exist.
I wouldn't even be running because I'll be passed out on the ground.
Like, do not resuscitate.
Oh, my God.
Like, they would stop chasing me because I'd be like, she's gone.
She's gone. She's dead.
She's gone. We don't even want to eat her. She's so dead. She's so dead. We can't even have this one.
But they're like, I don't know. The night soldiers are like, they're like zombies that come up out of the ground, but they're kind of sentient because they kidnap Charlie.
I don't appreciate that.
Yeah.
Stop.
Not fair. It's not fair. You can't be both. Right. You can't be both.
It's like when they're zombies, but they move quick
when they can run. And you're like, oh, what? What is this new age zombie bullshit? Y'all supposed to be sluggish and can barely pick your legs up.
Please stop. Please.
So he gets captured. And he gets, like, stuck down in this dungeon. And down in the dungeon, there are other people down there that have been captured.
Oh, my God.
And so...
because they're all like you, Charlie.
Charlie.
Fucking idiot.
So the one guy, I can't remember what
like, they would have to come and get me out of my bed.
Oh,
my
God.
That's the only way I'm getting down. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You can't make it easy for them.
No. So the one guy that's, like, kind of befriended Charlie because he wants Charlie to, like, be his protector because Charlie's, like, a big kid. He plays football. He plays sports. Yeah. He's, like, athletic. So he's, like...
he's athletic on top of that.
Yeah.
And they got you.
So he like, is kind of befriending Charlie, but the leader of, like, the night soldiers, he wants to talk to Charlie. So that's where I'm at right now. Charlie is gone. He's, like, summoned Charlie, and Charlie's going to talk to him. And that's where I'm at right now. So Radar got out. He's running back off to Darla. Mr. Bodicich has a friend named Darla. That's where he got that tricycle thing from. He was using that was hers, but he done lost it. So now she done lost her fucking form of transportation down there. And Radar has run off to her. So hopefully they're going to come back to rescue.
So we still can't get out.
No, he's trapped down there right now. And the other guys are saying, like, we're done. You're going to die down here. We've been down here for a while, and there's no way to get out. But, of course, Charlie's like, I'm not fucking staying down here. I need to get back out.
But also, what do you mean I'm going to die down here? You've been down here, and you ain't dead yet. Yeah. What the fuck? What is it about me? What did I do? Fuck.
Yeah, why you got to be so...
How long? You've been down here, like, 6 months.
Yeah.
You ain't dead.
And you ain't dead. So,
what are you talking about me?
So we'll see.
What do you mean?
And so Charlie's down here. His dad doesn't know because he wrote a note to his dad saying that he was going to Chicago for some reason. And
oh my God.
So his dad doesn't even know that he's missing
so
or that he's down there.
Dumb. Yeah. This guy. You
oh
guys,
my God.
This guy is so
child. This is a kid.
That's true.
So
that's why I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I couldn't be a teacher. Not in the public school system. I couldn't do none of that. It's 7 in the morning.
Please stop being so stupid.
It's 7 in the morning.
So that's what I have been reading, and it's getting good. I've only got about 9 hours left in the Audible, so I'll probably finish it probably tomorrow at work because I'll probably listen to it all day.
Damn. Yeah, I like it.
So I'm loving it. And then after that, I'm going to read How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accent.
Nice.
So I'm excited about that.
I think I'm going to start Cutter's Deep.
Ooh, yeah.
By Ron. I meant to do it earlier. Earlier than this anyway, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's got some good reviews on Amazon too. Yeah. So.
And it'll be different. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So before we get to the interview, of course we're gonna talk about our band book of the week.
Ooh.
Yeah. This week's band book of the week is All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson. It was published on April 28th, 2020 by Farr, Strauss, and I'm not going to be able to say that, Groux, G-I-R-O-U-X. Yeah, good luck with that.
Look, mind you, I don't even know what letters you said because I can't process that. So, like, I don't even know. I just heard an R, and then I had O-U-X.
Yeah, it's a FSG publishing. It's a United States publishing company. Mm-hmm. The book, All Boys Aren't Blue, consists of a series of essays following Johnson's journey growing up as a queer black man in Plainsfield, New Jersey, and in Virginia. Mm. In addition to describing Johnson's own experience, it directly addresses black queer boys who may not have someone in their life with similar experiences. The book discusses consent, agency, sexual abuse, alongside various other topics. It also describes two sexual encounters and statutory rape. Mm. The book did get a lot of good reviews. Publishers Weekly noted that though at first glance the book lacks the synthesizing call to action that Manifesto would imply, because it's called a memoir / manifesto. Its Be Yourself message remains a radical stance for doubly marginalized individuals. They continue to say, in a publishing landscape in need of queer black voices, readers who are sorting through similar concepts will be grateful to join him on the journey and call it a balming testimony to young readers as allies in the fight for equality. The book, of course, was banned. All Boys Aren't Blue has frequently been censored because of it includes LGBTQ consent and profanity. It's also considered to be sexually explicit. In 2021, the American Library Association's Office of Intellectual Freedom named it the third most banned and challenged book in the United States. Mm. It's the second most banned in 2022. School boards in at least 10 states have removed the book from their libraries. And this is a good one. In 2021, Flagler County School Board member and retired teacher Jill Woolbright filed a criminal complaint against the superintendent for carrying the book, objecting to mentions of masturbation and oral sex. The Flagler County Sheriff's Office found that the content of the book was not a violation of the law and did not warrant any further investigation. The removal of the book prompted students to protest. Mm. Ma'am, you're retired. Mm. Go sit on the beach.
No, don't go sit on the beach. We don't want you there.
Go find something to do. But that is our band book of the week, All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson. And you can get that on Amazon Prime or probably at your local bookstore. Go check that out. It sounds like a good book. It's definitely something that if you're in the LGBTQ category and you're looking for something that's in something to read to relate to, this list looks like something that would be up your alley. And I'm pretty sure that we talked about this in our banned book series when we did our book episode on the history of banned books.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this.
And the cover is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Such a very pretty cover. So go get that. Again, that's All Boys Aren't Blue by George M. Johnson, and that's our banned book of the week. So we are going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking to Miss Irina Ember.
Yep.
Yeah.
Before we get into too much, we wanted to take an opportunity to thank our sponsor, the Anxious Tomato Art Gallery. The Anxious Tomato is more than a simple art gallery. Started by Ashley Laufer and Kate Roussel in their stride to connect with the local artistic community, the Anxious Tomato Art Gallery strives to provide more education and accessibility to art and artists in Tacoma and its surrounding areas. They aspire to be an experience for the public, ensuring that everyone leaves with a renewed view of art and the artists behind it. Their online presence allows for artists of various mediums to submit work, be recognized, and engage with the community. If you'd like to experience a new type of art gallery, support, engage, and donate to the Anxious Tomato at anxioustomato.com. That's anxioustomato.com. Thanks for listening. Now back to the show.
All right, guys, we are back and we are talking to Miss Irina Ember. If you want to introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, I'm so glad to be on your podcast, and I'm really, I really appreciate that you guys are doing it. It's a lot of work, I know, to do a podcast, and I'm excited to be here. Thank you for interviewing an obscure self-published author. I did try to get a publishing deal before I decided to self-publish, but wound up going the self-publishing route, and it's definitely has its challenges. I know you guys are going to ask me some questions. Anyway, I'm a little nervous, so I hope I'm a good guest, and I hope that I don't hijack your podcast too
much. You're going to be great, I'm sure.
Okay.
So I know from your questionnaire, it says that you live in the San Francisco Bay Area. Are you from the San Francisco Bay Area?
No, I'm from the East Coast, actually.
Oh, nice. Where are you from?
We'll just keep that, like, I'll keep it light on the private details.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It is a pseudonym, and I definitely, I don't know, did you guys read the book?
I've read a little bit of it in the beginning. I've loved it. I was just saying, you're very descriptive. I like that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you. I was worried about you guys. I didn't want you to get traumatized by the
book.
No.
Yeah.
Nice. So I'm from the East Coast.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, where? I'm from Connecticut.
Oh, okay. I've been to Connecticut. I'm not from Connecticut, but I've been there. But yeah, it's nice. A pseudonym, so I definitely don't want to get found out, like, who I am.
Of course.
I'm not trying to be famous, but I'm not trying to be that obscure. So.
Right.
I don't know. Hopefully I won't say anything ridiculous, but if I get canceled, I figure that could only be good for my
Right, then that'll really want people,
the controversy.
To read your book, right?
Exactly.
So yeah. What is a popular food in the San Francisco Bay Area? What's your go-to food?
You asked me that. You know, ever since COVID, I've just been cooking by myself, you know, cook, and, you know, and then everything got so expensive, so I wouldn't say I've been indulging that much in going out, you know, because, like, I can make a taco.
Right.
You know, just buy, like, really good salsa. And but probably the best thing I've ever eaten was in San Francisco, and it was these beignets. They're, like, savory beignets with porcini dust on them.
Wow.
And then you dip them in this raclette dipping sauce, which is, like, this soft cheese. It's pretty crazy.
Ooh, that sounds good.
A savory beignet. Mm-hmm. I'm in.
Yeah, with porcini dust. So porcini is like umami. You know, it's got the umami flavor. So, but they have really good, a lot of Asian food that's good in the Bay Area too. All kinds of food. Yeah.
Ooh, nice. I like that.
I'm always down for that. That's kind of what I like about here. So.
Mm-hmm. So what initially got you into reading? Have you always been a reader?
I think my parents, each of them read to me. They were divorced when I was little, but they each read to me, and I think that helps people learn to read. But I think I have, like, a trauma background, and I think I stopped being able to read. You know, I just, it became, there's, like, too much going on in my head, and I just reread the same thing over and over again. So I became somebody who just read, like, I could read a little bit of, like, pop science books. And I can read, like, self-help books, you know, cause I'm trying to, like, figure out how do I resolve, you know, my PTSD or whatever. And it's only been recently that I've started being like, I'm healed enough that I'm able to pay attention long enough to read. So I know one of you kept mentioning, which one is reading the book with orange in the title?
Oh, I was.
Mm-hmm. That book called?
Priory of the Orange Tree.
Oh, and did you finish it?
Yes, I did. I actually just talked about it today. So,
Okay. Yeah, that's like a fantasy book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I probably wouldn't have been able to follow along that long in a book. Like I'll make it like part of the way in, and then can't make it much further. But what was the other one you were reading? Drowning with Others.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Did you finish that one?
Yeah, I did. That was a really good book. That had like the ending of it. You wanted the person, the villain, like the teacher, you wanted him to be dead, but then you had to find out that the teacher wasn't actually really the villain. The parents were the villain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's still a villain.
Yeah. I mean, he was a villain, yes, but there was bigger fish. He was actually not the biggest
small
fish in
potatoes.
The Yeah, right.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's interesting to hear, because it seems like he would be the easy villain.
Right.
Have you read My Dark Vanessa?
No, what's that about?
So that one, it sounds like, has some similarities. It's about, like, the person who wrote it, she actually has a disclaimer at the beginning that says, you know, I know a lot of you know my background and where I'm from, and you assume that this book is about me, and it's not. Mm. And it's about a young woman who gets involved with her much older professor. And then at the end, she has, like, here are talking points, you know? But it's, I would say, and she talks about how she's interested in Lolita. Do you guys know Lolita?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say it's sort of like Lolita from Lolita's point of view, but not exactly. Because I was thinking about that some more, and like, what if Lolita wrote that book, but she was like just nasty, like, yeah, I'm really hot for this old professor dude, you know? Know if that would fly today. Like, would anybody, like, could anybody write that? Would that get published? Do you know what I mean? Like,
I get what you're saying. I don't know. Maybe. But if they made it, I don't know. I feel like there would be an acceptable way of doing that, because there's like elements of that in real life, I guess. But you're right. I don't know.
Like, if she was the bad one.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's like, even to what degree, like, no matter how they depict her, how could that really be the case with the power dynamics? You know what I mean? Like, she may feel like that, but kids are wrong about stuff all the time.
Yeah, but what if she's just like a bad person?
Right. I think that could be true too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, she's still a kid, but she's like...
But she's like, kids can be evil,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah.
Oh, that would be a good book though.
But who would publish that? And like, can you imagine the reviews for that?
Oh, yeah. The reviews would be...
It would have to be really complex. Mm-hmm. Like, they'd have to do a really good job navigating that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I would probably read it low-key. I mean, just, you know, just for the sake of research.
Right.
You know,
research. Don't you think people would be like, this is porn?
Maybe.
Yeah, they would get...
And I could see that going the wrong way. Like, people taking advantage of the subject matter in weird ways. I could totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, creepy old dudes reading it.
Yeah.
Right.
And using that as their Bible for, like, you see?
Yeah. See the way that she looked at me, same way in this book, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
No. Interesting. Interesting.
Because American Beauty did that for a minute, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, and I had a friend, because, I had a friend who went to film school. He was, like, a young guy who wore all black every day. And he was like, yeah, what's up with the, you know, pedophilia in American cinema? Like, when he was talking about that movie, you know, like, it's acceptable, like, you know, this sort of attitude towards pedophilia basically in American Beauty. I don't know, not my opinion, his opinion.
No, I think a lot of cultures have that.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I see it all the time, and it's very concerning, but
yeah,
they work it in some kind of way.
Sure.
They'll make sure.
Interesting.
So what kinds of media do you like to read? Do you read analog books? Are you into the Kindle book? Have you jumped into the audio world?
So I would say no on the Kindle. I think when it first came out, I got a Kindle and I lost it or something. I have read books on Kindle. I think self-help books, but I like a paperback. Mm-hmm. I like a paperback, and I just got some reading glasses. I didn't know, like, I was my eyes were sort of going. Mm-hmm. So I got reading glasses help you read, that's for sure. And so I put my book out and I'm like, oh, nobody's reading this. You know, how do I get this out? So I went on NetGalley and I went on Goodreads. Mm-hmm. So I did a Goodreads giveaway, and like, I think like four people reviewed it or something. And they're just like, I didn't really, this isn't a book for me. And 3 stars. And one woman, she went on NetGalley and she reviewed it. And she reviewed it both places. And she said, this is another book, like a book called Ripe. And then a book called The New Me by Hallie somebody. So anyway, I bought that book, The New Me. And I kind of liked it. It's about a millennial going to work and like she doesn't feel good about herself and she doesn't have a good time at work, and it's from some sort of different points of view, and it's sort of like a book where not a lot happens, but at the same time in her world I guess a good amount happens. But anyway, this lady thought my book was like her book, so that's why I read that book. Is that a long, does that story make sense?
No, it does. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I was listening on audio to the one called Ripe. This person kept talking about this black dot or this black hole or something, like this black spot. And I guess she's talking about depression. It was harder for me to listen to, I think, because it's an audiobook. But I think that one I didn't get as far into. And she just kept talking about this black spot, you know, following her around. Or I can't remember exactly how she put it. I mean, but I started wondering, am I depressed? If this lady said my book was like this book, you know, so.
You're like, what does this say?
What does this say about me? Right.
So I got a therapist since then. And he said, you know, on a scale of like 1 to 21, you only scored like a 7. So you're like not that depressed and you're not that anxious. So that was cool.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's good. Yeah. At least you went and got professional help. You didn't go on WebMD. And take some sort of crazy quiz.
That confirmation bias. Leaps out.
Yes. So where's your go-to place to buy books when you are looking for a book in San Francisco area? Do you have a good bookstore in your area?
Yeah. Well, let me first say, just in order to further obscure my identity, I'm within 50 miles of the San Francisco Bay Area.
So, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just leave it all vague like that. But I like the little bookstores, you know, where the manager knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like so I walked into this bookstore and I was like, I'm writing a book. Like, can I get my book in here? You know, it does have some like coercive sex in it and it may not be for everybody. And she was like, well, have you read My Dark Vanessa? That they have that in that book. So that's how I found out about that book. So I think it's really cool when you can go into a store and the person knows. Like, yeah. Stuff, you know, mm-hmm. like, and so they can actually advise you on what to read. So that's, I think that's the best.
Yeah. I agree. Like that. That's kind of it's kind of an understated part of going to the bookstore or anywhere you're looking for media, mm-hmm. really. Just somebody that kind of knows what you're talking about.
And like, kind of knows not just like books, but like what's trending in the times. Like how she was like, oh, you're doing this book? Well, this is a book that's out. Like, she knows what's happening currently. That's really nice.
Yeah.
And helpful.
Like going to the music store and you hum a song and they've like got it. Yeah. People don't do that, but Shazam does. And you want that. Mm-hmm. In a bookstore.
That's really, you know what's been good for finding music is like HBO, like cable shows, you know, some of the music supervisors. Mm-hmm. And you should have it. I found really good music that way.
I do too, especially if they will credit it like after the commercial break. Sometimes they'll put the full album cover and the names on there. And I'm like, thank you. I appreciate you.
Take a picture so I can remember, right?
Literally.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite author?
Favorite author.
Or multiple favorite authors. Most people can't pick just one.
I would say, you know what? I've had this sort of celebrity crush thing. This is completely unfounded. But, you know, Salman Rushdie?
Yeah. I don't know. Sounds so familiar. Yeah.
guy who wrote the Satanic Verses, and he, I think the Shah of Iran issued a fatwa on him. So, like, somebody attacked him not that long ago at, like, a book convention. I think somebody attacked him, and he may have lost an eye. So that guy's pretty, I think he's pretty, pretty tough.
Oh, well, yeah, I want to read his book now.
It's very poetic, and it's very original. Like, when I wrote my book, I didn't want to write, you know, like, literary, super literary. I wanted to write the way that we talk, you know? I wanted to write accessible. I'm not trained, but I don't like books that are, like, blah, 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 you know, that are overly affected.
Yeah. Like, super academic in nature, really.
Or, yeah, or just using all these words just to be using.
Yeah, very wordy.
You don't talk like that, right. You know? And, I mean, Salman Rushdie might, you know, talk that way. So I'm not talking about it right now. But I just wanted to write the way that I talk.
Right.
Because, like, I like to read what I've written out loud. And, you know, that's how I chose how to write it in past tense, too. You know, because if I tell you a story, like, it's like I went to the store and they were out of pencils and then I decided to buy some bubble gum. But that's how we tell stories, right? In the past tense. Right.
Right.
I mean, we don't say it like I am at the store and I, you know, I don't know. So that's how I decided to do it. But that wasn't your question.
No, but it's about your favorite author. And that could be an aspect of why. Right, so yeah, I get that.
Definitely.
Yeah, so I think I'm just have sort of like a celebrity crush on Salman Rushdie. So I could say that he's my favorite author.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to read anybody that's going to get somebody that worked up that you're willing to attack them over a book. I want to read your book now. What got this guy so upset?
Yeah, what'd you do?
Yeah.
There's something else he wrote. I feel like I'm blanking on it right now. It's like
the name is so familiar. Yeah.
Salman Rushdie. Yeah, and he dated Padma Lakshmi.
Oh,
okay.
From Top Chef.
Yeah, that might be.
Yeah, that might be the why. Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Didn't work out. But and I think he's remarried now, so I'm not going after him or anything.
Just like, he's off the market.
You're like,
now.
Everybody relax.
Yeah, but if you just like go on Amazon, you can actually read some samples of it, and you just read it out loud. I think it's really beautiful. Like, I like reading stuff out loud.
Mm-hmm. He does like magical realism, right?
Does he? I have no idea. I really haven't read very much.
Okay, I don't know. I feel like I'm gonna look it up later. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile. Mm-hmm. I think it's worthwhile. It's very It's very poetic. Yeah.
So what draws you to a particular story when you're looking for a book?
Huh. I think, you know, that's a good question. I have a lot of trouble reading fiction, you know. I mean, I like Annie Proulx, you know, that I read something like An Ace in the Hole or something about the guy trying to buy people's land to start a pig farm. That was interesting. I don't remember it really well, but what was the question again?
What draws you to a story when you're looking for a book?
Oh, you know, I think it has to be something in my life that I'm interested in or something that I can not necessarily relate to, but that it's trying to answer a question that I want answered or maybe that is about something that I could see myself in. But I really like stuff that feels true. And that's also what I tried to write, you know, was like, you know how they say, write what you know about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though my book is fiction, like I really did pull from stuff that is true and real. Like I'm not, you know, mostly. The stuff that is fictional was like a lot harder for me to write. Like the pure fiction made up harder for me to write. But for instance, like I found, you know those libraries when you walk down the street and people have the leave a book, take a book?
Yeah.
Those? So they're all over my neighborhood. And I took one and it was that one that somebody got in trouble about. My cat's meowing. The woman who is not from Central America, but she wrote as though she was a Central American. I think it's called American Dirt.
I don't know.
She got in big trouble because she's not Central American, and she wrote a book about being a Central American woman. I didn't read it, but it's just sitting there, and I have a hard time like being interested in it because it's totally made up. Or right. I have She's Come Undone by Wally somebody or other, and I can't get into that because it's by a dude writing from the point of view of a really overweight woman who's got a lot.
Lord.
Well, we already know how we feel about them writing women characters, child.
Yeah, and they're like, please.
Go ahead and put that down.
Yeah.
You stop right there.
Yeah. Well, he explains in the intro, and this is also what I think is weird at the beginning of a book when people have to say, well, listen, this is what I'm doing with this book. Like, are we all, like, none of us can handle that, you know? He writes in the beginning, this is where the inspiration came from, because I knew this young woman and blah, 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 blah. And I don't know.
Unless you were a fat woman, you don't need to be writing about fat women.
Yeah, that can get weird real fast.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily judge it because it's fiction, right? And we all have minds, and we should be able to go into the minds and bodies of other people, you know, but it's ultimately just what we're imagining.
Yeah.
Is it, right? But I just don't get interested in that. Like, I want to know about the guy who's writing it. Like, why are you writing about this?
You know? Yeah, like, right.
I want to know, like, the truth.
It has to make sense. You have to make it make sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but in the world today, like, we kind of we're not allowed to speak for somebody else, you know? I mean, you everybody has to have their own voice, right? Mm-hmm.
I get that.
Mm-hmm. I do definitely agree that there is a lane. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, again, not everything's for everybody, but you shouldn't be just dibbling and dabbling,
right?
Certain things either.
Yeah,
so I definitely get that.
I didn't want to write in a way that it excluded people, so I tried not to make it about like how do I identify. Like when I wrote it, to not say, you know, be too specific about. You know, this character's race or, you know, even her age. I just said middle-aged. And because I was hoping, honestly, that, like, somebody would turn it into a Netflix special. And then it could be, you know, anybody.
Any
like
age,
I
didn't, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any age, any race. Like, although I'm sure the language that I use, you know, is very specific to where I come from, right? You know, how I was raised.
Right.
Where I was raised.
Yeah,
whatever.
Right, your dialects and stuff.
But I was hoping that it was open enough that anybody could take it and appropriate it and make it about them.
Which I think a lot of people appreciate when especially when you're looking for a book that's like about healing and stuff, you want to be able to see yourself in a character. So when it's kind of ambiguous, it's a lot easier to be able to see yourself in a character instead of someone being very specific about their characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the only thing that I didn't dial back completely was, you know, talking about the race of the men that she was sleeping with.
Mm-hmm.
So she sleeps with some, like, you know, varied assortment of mm-hmm. Men from different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Do you have any pet peeves when it comes to reading? What turns you off from a book? You kind of talked about this. You don't like fiction. Is there anything else that kind of turned you off when it comes to reading?
I mean, I can get into fiction, like that Annie Proulx book. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe it's the language, you mm-hmm. know, like overly. Like I tried to read The Goldfinch, which I think is like it's enormous book, mm-hmm. But I just couldn't get into the language. It was like a barrier to me. I think that's one thing. But also, I sort of want to feel like it's true. Like, I think that's why I like, you know, books about people who almost died. Or like, have you heard of that book Educated by Tara Westover? So she grew up in like her family. They were, I have a terrible memory. So you have to discover this book on your own and find out. But she, it was like being raised in a cult and, you know, they didn't believe in education. She had to work in the family. Like, they had to go search for scrap metal as little kids. Mm-hmm. And they were part, I think it was the Church of the Latter-day Saints, but don't, I can't remember. But it's about her eventually becoming, you know, educated. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really moving book, really moving.
That sounds good.
I think I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I'm not against fiction. It's just that I guess the voice has to sound, it has to pull me in.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to picture this happening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, even if the story itself isn't true, it being based on real, potentially real events works better.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with sci-fi. Sorry, what were you saying?
No, I'm done. I'm good.
Okay.
Sci-fi can get a little crazy, too. Sometimes they can get a little crazy, and you're like, this is too much.
Yeah.
You've gone too far here.
Only because I try to consider whatever the author's vision is, and I'm like, I don't think I'm getting it, bro.
Yeah.
Might not be getting it.
Right, I'm not picking up what you're putting down.
Right. What if I'm wrong? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Do you have any favorite or least favorite movie to screen, book to screen adaptations?
Oh, book to screen adaptations. Well, there are movies that I've seen where I haven't read the books, you know, like Requiem for a Dream. I actually bought that. Okay. So again, I was trying to figure out what kind of, oh yeah, it's amazing. Have you ever bought the book? Because it's based on a book. So the way I was trying to figure out what kind of book have I written, and I decided because of some other book somebody mentioned, I decided that maybe it's transgressive. And so then I looked up who are transgressive authors, and the guy who wrote Requiem for a Dream is one of them. Mm. And also wrote, I think, Last Exit to Brooklyn, which was also made into a movie. So I bought that book, and it's hard reading, like the beginning. It opens in this sort of dialect. And I didn't get much past it, but I will. But I loved that movie. I thought it was amazing. How did the director of the movie get from this book to this movie? You know, it seems like a lot happened, you know, to go from one to the next. It's just really amazing. Charlie Kaufman, what's that movie called? You know, with Jim Carrey, where they erase your memories.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah. Love that. I didn't read the book. Was that a book first?
I think it was. Mm-hmm. It feels booky.
It was a good movie.
But I have also never read the book. But that movie I love.
Yeah, that's a good movie. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing movie.
Mm-hmm. If there was one thing that we should all stop and read, what would you suggest? What's your go-to book recommendation?
Go-to book recommendation. She looks at her side of her. Let's see. Nothing here. Let's see.
We get a lot of people who are like, let's see, what do I have right
literally,
here?
Literally, what's right now?
Exactly. How about this one? The Drunkard's Walk.
Ooh.
How Randomness Rules Our Lives.
Ooh.
Very true. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is pretty dry. It's pretty dry. He spends a lot. Like, I made it to page 110 out of... It's interesting, though. He talks a lot about, like... you know, if you have three choices, like, and you pick one, then you should make another choice. So I do that when I'm picking bathroom stalls. So I pick like one bathroom stall, and I'll be like, no, let me make a second choice. Like, if you're going to win the prize, you know, say, would you want to pick from one of these two? You are supposed to make that second choice in order to win.
Oh, okay.
Probability. Right. But again, I'm not explaining it correctly.
Yeah, but that makes sense, though.
Like, rethinking it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They do say that when you're, like, pressured to, like, when you think about your decision too long sometimes, like, people, they tend to become indecisive in the process because you've given them that amount of time to think about it. But then, like, if you tell them, I don't know, one of them has less pressure on it. I might be getting that backwards. But, like, one of the choices, whether you have to decide now or later, winds up being the better one because there is either more or less pressure on it. Like, you feel more confident. But now I feel like I botched it.
That might not be right.
Don't listen to me. I'm not good.
So yeah, tell us about your book. What's your book about?
Oh, okay. I feel like I've been fitting it into every question.
Yeah.
It took me like 7 years to write it. And at first I was struggling with what kind of book it was. It was going to be like a memoir because I have a lot of trauma and blah, blah, blah. Then I decided I didn't want to write a memoir, and I didn't want to dwell on all this stuff, you know. And the book has a lot of like internal dialogue, and I think the next book I write is also going to have it. It's like you're in the person's, you know, you're in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that was, you know, I heard of this guy, Philip Roth. I heard of him because he's from like the 60s or 70s.
Mm-hmm.
He's a well-known Jewish author. And I'd heard of this book, Portnoy's Complaint, because it's all written to his psychiatrist. So it's like neurotic, you know, completely neurotic. And there's a lot about his mother's vagina, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I haven't read like a whole bunch of this, but the way that it's written is all he's talking to his doctor, like Woody Allen, basically, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, Lord, yeah. mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah. So why did I start talking about this? And I found out about Philip Roth because I heard on one of those book review podcasts, like the New York Times or something, that his ex-girlfriend had written a book. And it wasn't so great about him.
Oh no.
Got it.
Yeah. So that made me kind of interested in just learning a little bit about like the history of, you know, this is like not that long ago, history of American culture, American, mm-hmm. you know, fiction. Why did I start telling you about that?
What's your book about? You're telling us about your book.
Mm-hmm. The original inspo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is a little bit where I do write a chapter that's like, directly to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say that this could have influenced me a little bit. That's sort of, and one lady who reviewed it said, it's like a journal. Like I have my own therapist. I don't need to read this. So,
mm-hmm.
It's about, a real estate agent in the Bay Area she's in San Francisco, who has a lot of problems advocating for herself, even though she's a real estate agent. You know, it's called Bad Agency, and it's about how she's trying to function in the world as a normal person, but she has a history of trauma. Like, mm-hmm. so she passes as normal, but all of her trauma is just like, gets into her work, it gets mm-hmm. into her, all of her relationships, all of her interactions with people. It's just because there's this like, you know, unhealed like blob of trauma, you know, going on beneath it because of like true horrible stuff that she's been through mm-hmm. in her past. And I think I wrote that because, you know, I wanted to write a book that was like, ha ha, look how screwed up I am. And I was telling a woman about it who's a writer. And I realized as I was talking to her, nobody can relate to this. Nobody can relate to this. Like, most people aren't walking around like, look how screwed up I am. Oh, and I've been through more trauma than most people. Like, so I realized people can't relate to this. So I tried to dial that back. And it's really about her trying to figure out how to function in the world and how to get past having these self sabotaging relationships, you know. And I feel like that is very relatable.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of people don't understand, why do I keep doing this? Why do I keep getting into relationships with people like this? Why do I always have this dynamic, you know? And I was having this dynamic with men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So it really was trying to figure that out. And that is something I've been trying to figure out personally. So that is what I had the character trying to figure out, like, and depicting, you know, everything that she does, everywhere that she goes, she keeps getting into these same like screwed up dynamics with people that don't come out in her favor. And like, what is her breaking point, and what does she do to get past it? So that's what it's about. And yeah, she gets treatment, and you know, she starts to change herself. But am I ruining that?
No.
It's but, about the journey. This is the mm-hmm. part I like. Like, mm-hmm. this is awesome. So yeah, keep going.
Yeah, well, that's about it. I mean, without giving you all the details of it, but yeah, she, you know, it, the hardest thing in trying to change yourself is changing, you know, your behavior. Mm-hmm. It can be sort of addictive getting into mm-hmm. same kinds of relationships with people. And for her, it's really about, you know, being in this sort of learned helplessness, which I know a lot of people deal with, like mm-hmm. once you feel victimized, you're like this, you know, you become a victim, and then you kind of can't act on your own behalf. And it's hard to come into yourself and to have agency in the world, you know, rather than function as a codependent, you know, trying to manipulate and make things okay and safe for you by trying to control other people by being, you know, overly nice or passive aggressive or whatever. So
it sounds like a really great book. I'm excited to keep reading it. Mm-hmm.
And I think it is relatable. Like, maybe not the events themselves, right? Those are very individual, but I think the emotions, for sure, the journey itself. Mm-hmm. And I think people don't get as far, honestly, in even beginning to think about the why mm-hmm. behind their actions. So it might just be more of like a rude awakening for a lot of people. And maybe they just don't want to like even open up that can of worms, which is, you know, whatever.
You can be a writer. I feel like sometimes people need to watch or read somebody else open up their can of worms before they can open up their own can.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
Here with my
kids. Yeah, I really wanted it to reach, I mean, who I thought it was for was like, you know, women who struggle with like, you know, for instance, you know, self-esteem and getting into relationships with abusive people and not understanding why they stay. I mean, a lot of people really don't understand why, you know, especially women stay in abusive relationships. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you know, it's addictive behavior. I think it's and it's very, very difficult to change. I have a lot of sympathy for people like that, and that's the question I'm trying to answer. You know, is why do we keep doing things even though we're harming ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That brings me to what I'm watching lately. My 600-pound life.
I was literally watching My 600-Pound Life today. I was literally.
That show is so crazy.
Stephanie, I swear on everything. It's right here on Prime.
I love it. I love that show. I'm studying it. I mean, their struggle is so hard. I mean, I would like to see them revise the show now that Ozempic is around, right?
Yes.
You know, these poor people are so addicted to food to comfort themselves. From mm-hmm. They've all been violated as a child mm-hmm. and have been and abandoned, and they and to cope they just eat and it's addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, okay, you have to just stop, you're, you know, you're lying to yourself, you know, and you're cheating on your diet, you know. And they're like, I don't eat that much, I really tried my hardest, and you know, mm-hmm. then they're eating like all the stuff, and he's making them just quit this addiction
cold turkey.
It's like that's not gonna help.
It's crazy. And it's like, I just feel like in 30 years we're all gonna have like a bunch of doctors and psychologists come out and really discuss how gastric bypass is like barbaric and evil and crazy.
And so
I've been watching it for the same reasons, because like, I mean, I've watched Intervention and all of those shows like my whole life. It's the same thing. It's mm-hmm. literally the same thing.
Yeah, it's some loop in your brain. It's like, it's addiction. Mm-hmm. It's some kind of addictive mm-hmm. addictive thinking and addictive behavior. And it's emotional addiction, I think. Yep.
Down to the enablers, like the same, like manipulative tactic, everything. It's the same.
Yeah, but it's fascinating.
Handled way differently.
Mm-hmm.
But the gastric bypass, so they shrink the tummy up. Mm-hmm. And so this person still has this psychological
right. need. So their mental needs have not been met at all.
Yeah,
it's terrifying.
Have you ever heard of the Tibetan Book of the Dead?
No.
So when I was a teenager, this was like one of the hip things to read, like the Tao Te Ching and Hermann Hesse, Siddhartha, you know, which mm-hmm. has probably been canceled now. But I forgot what I was talking about. What was the book I just mentioned?
Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, there's one realm. So you pass through these realms when you're dying, apparently, mm-hmm. according to the book. And one of the realms is called the Realm of the Hungry Ghosts. And it's these beings with enormous appetites, and their mouths are like straws.
That sounds terrifying, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking that's like the weight loss surgery.
Yep.
Yes.
You know,
they have this enormous appetite, but mm-hmm. their stomach is all tiny now, and they're like, they can't even physically get what mm-hmm. they need.
Yep.
Which sounds awful.
And they're just suffering. Sometimes, mm-hmm. like, if you don't get therapy before you have that kind of surgery, like, they'll make you go through treatment first mentally before you have the surgery, because a lot of times, like, you'll turn to addiction after that.
Yeah, because you want to get, yeah, right.
So, mm-hmm. It just transfers.
Yeah, I thought the issue was that if they don't get therapy, he's worried they're just going to go back to stuffing themselves and stretch their stomach out.
It's partially that, but because it causes them so much physical pain, they may actually stick to the diet, but it'll turn into something else. Smoking, drinking, you know, drugs, whatever. Exercise. They'll get addicted to exercise. Even like, it just kind of, if you don't deal with it, it'll just transfer mm-hmm. to something else. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Have you tried that diet? 1,200 calories, protein, no carbs?
No. Oh, my God.
It's really, really hard. What he's asking them to do, I can't do it. Like, I've tried to do it, and it's really hard. You know, yeah. I have to have, like a piece of fudge or cookie or, you know.
Yeah,
I have
that's crazy.
A little bit.
Yeah. So imagine if you're like 600 pounds.
Oh my God. 1,200 calories is not a lot.
And you're eating like five times that every day. And he's like,
not a lot of food.
You have to eat the amount of a toddler.
You can only eat like chicken and vegetables or mm-hmm. fish and vegetables. That's all you can eat. It gets really it's very hard.
Yeah.
I think it's extremely hard what he's trying to have those people do. So anyway, I follow some of them on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
I do the same thing.
yeah, I think what they're doing is really hard, but I hope they're getting their Ozempic now. Yeah,
right. No, yeah, the Zempies, mm-hmm. they're out here. Mm-hmm.
So, where can people find your book? Are you available on Amazon?
I'm all over Amazon.
Oh,
Amazon.
Nice.
Yeah, that you know, they say to go through Ingram Spark, but yeah, I need reviews. That's what I need. I will mm-hmm. send people. Copy if they would even just think about doing a review on Amazon.
Oh, well, we will definitely be leaving Amazon reviews for sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, we'll definitely be leaving Amazon reviews, and we're going to leave a link to your book in our show notes mm-hmm. for sure, too.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking with us today. We really had a good time.
All right. Are you going to cancel me when we hang up?
Absolutely not.
No way. You have yourself a great day.
All right.
Thanks.
Too.
Bye.
Sure. Bye.
Oh, she was great.
She's so real.
Oh, I'm excited to put a review for her book on
Amazon.
I'm
excited to read the book, too. I'm trying to see what's up with that.
I like that she
sounds
wrote.
Sounds like it's going to destroy me.
I love a good book that's going to be some good trauma.
Yeah. Is it bad? Yeah, that's bad. Mm. But good to know.
But it's also like she's coming through it. So it should feels like it's going to have a good ending.
Hopefully.
And I like that she wrote the way that she was talking. Like the way that she, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, so it's not, she's no Stephen King putting a whole bunch of damn words in there that's unfreaking necessary.
Period.
Please.
Just tell
get
me.
Get to the point.
What you need to say.
Seriously. So I'm excited. And before we go, we just want to let everybody know that we're going to be giving a copy of her book away.
Yes.
Yes. If you want a copy of her book, all you have to do is follow us on Instagram and leave a comment on the post for this episode, and then we'll do some sort of trivia drawing thing to pick a one, and we'll send you a copy of her book.
Easy.
Yeah, and then you can read it, and then you can leave a review for her.
And you better leave a review or else. Don't fucking play with me.
Or we're going to come back to you and find and take our book back.
That'd be so mean.
Excuse me.
You, like,
me.
Show up and you just snatch it and you're like,
thank you.
You don't want it.
No review, no book.
I don't care if you already read it.
Right.
Give it back.
So before we get out of here, we just want to say, head over to The Anxious Tomato.
Yes.
Yes. We've got so much going on. I'm not sure. If this episode's coming out before Gallery Night, then of course head over to Gallery Night. It's on the 29th. If it's coming out after Gallery Night, the next one is going to be in November. So check that one out. The Gallery Nights are every month, the last Sunday of the month. Mm-hmm. And they're at Locust Cider on 6th Avenue, Tacoma. And you can find out where and when the Gallery Nights are if you follow Anxious Tomato, the Anxious Tomato Gallery on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Or you can follow the Anxious Tomato on Facebook, and all the information for the Gallery Nights will be on there. And if you want to get your art up in one of the galleries, because we do Locust Cider on 6th Avenue Tacoma, the one in Olympia, and the one in Gig Harbor, go to theanxioustomato.com and fill out the application and you can get your art up there. Mm-hmm. The ones in Gig Harbor and Olympia are up for 2 months. You can have your art up for 2 months and on display, and it's a good way to sell your art. We do get a lot of art sold in that time that it's up. So, and then of course, follow us on Instagram. We have the So What Are You Reading podcast on Instagram.
Yeah, go to all of our stuff.
And thank you to everybody who left reviews. We've gotten
a recent uptick
in reviews on Apple Podcasts. So please leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate it. There was a woman on Apple Podcasts that left us a review, and she asked how she could get her book on here. You just go to Instagram, and on our link tree, the questionnaire is there. If you, and that goes for anybody else, if you want to get your book, if you want to be a guest on the show, go to our link tree, and the questionnaire is right there. All you got to do is fill it out.
Yeah, just talk to me nice.
And what else do we have going on? Check us out on Facebook.
Of course. Book a hangout spot.
Yes.
Our Facebook group. Everywhere. Yeah. Just go to that link tree. Find out everywhere that we are.
And we are, we're all on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We are on Amazon Music. We're on Google Podcasts. All the things. So go check us out. And we will talk to you guys next weekend.
Yep. Later.
Bye.